Hello, and welcome to Kernel of Truth, a Cumulus Networks podcast where we focus on virtual veracity, legitimate Linux learning, and data center demystification. Whether we're discussing ASICs or back to the basics, you can count on Kernel of Truth for unique insight into the world of open networking. In this episode, we'll be discussing optical networking. But before we get into that, let's introduce ourselves. My name's Maddie. I'm the host of the podcast. I'm joined by two esteemed guests who will introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Brian O'Sullivan. I have product management for Cumulus Linux.
And I'm Scott Emery. I'm a principal engineer here at Cumulus. I'm very excited, by the way, to be on the podcast today. I'm a podcaster now, officially, and that's awesome. I was telling my wife this last night. She was really excited, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a big deal. She said I had the perfect face for podcasting, which was, now that I think of it, probably not the compliment I was expecting.
Next up, we'll be doing the marriage counseling podcast, and we'll get into that later. Another fun fact about Scott, few people might not know, he's actually a champion athlete. You were at one point on varsity badminton in high school, I believe.
That's right. Very proud of that. Did it mainly because I thought it'd be easy, but actually, it's hard, just so you know.
I was on varsity math team.
Huh. Mental exercise?
Yeah, it wasn't. You didn't get too sweaty.
I feel like you don't. That doesn't happen in badminton either. I think you guys could compete for who got bullied most in high school, probably.
I didn't get bullied in high school. I was on a math team. Oh, I see what you're saying.
Oh, yeah. Optical networking. We should probably get back to the optical networking. That's what everyone's here to listen to. I'm going to toss it over to you, Scott. Data center network engineers versus optical networking engineers. Explain.
Yeah. So I'm coming from the data center side of things. Data center network engineers, they understand layer 2 spanning tree and bridging and then layer 3 routing and all the routing protocols and all that layer 2, layer 3 stuff. And then they look at optical networking and they think, okay, yeah, that's a link and it sends data in here and comes out over there. And that's true, but there's a lot more to it. And then you talk to the optical networking people. I think, Brian, you went down to OFC, right?
I did.
In San Diego. And they understand about, oh, yeah, the light and the waveform and the bit errors and the multiplexers. And it's all very layer one. And then you ask them about, what about Ether channel? And they're like, what? And so there's really not a lot of intersection between these two groups, the data center network engineers and the optical network engineers. And so my hope today is that this podcast can just let us take some data center networking engineers and dip their foot in the water of optical networking, just give them a flavor for it.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of the stuff and part of the reason I went to OFC was, when we were talking about the Facebook Voyager box that we support, and I think part of the reasons that folks in the data center side haven't been able to do as much and learn as much on the optical side is because there weren't any boxes there that did both. Or if they were, there certainly weren't any white boxes. And so I think, that's changing quite a bit. And we're seeing a lot of interest and a lot of changes there from folks who, to your point, are more, quote unquote, typically DC folks.
What are some more specific impressions that you got from OFC? Tell us a little more about OFCs for people who might not be familiar with OFC, like me.
So it was quite good. OFC, and to Scott's point, I mean, I'm not an optical person either, and to see the it's the main optical convention, optical networking convention, and to see the number of people, the number of booths, the number of exhibitors. I mean, it's big. There's a ton of stuff there. There's a ton of functionality, a ton of devices, a ton of money being spent at it, and it was really quite impressive to see. From what I saw, there were the side of the optical where I know literally nothing about. You know, doing optical test suites, and I just walked by them and said, "Wow, that looks cool," but I don't really have any opinion on it one way or the other. And then there was the optical networking side, specifically the packet optical networking side, which I did look more into. Whether it was competitors, whether it was our partner ADVA, who's there, and they were demonstrating and are selling the Facebook Voyager running Cumulus Linux. But there was a lot of interest. Talked to a bunch of customers, and some of them were very excited about where it is we're going with that, and how they can look to bring in disaggregation, look to bring in white boxes into that world. So it was, yeah, it was quite good.
Awesome. So aside from them being pretty different worlds, do you guys have any opinions or ideas on why maybe there's not much of an intersection between data center network engineers and optical networking engineers? Is it just because they don't really swim in the same circles? Is it a lack of understanding of each other? Is it, what are your thoughts?
Some of them played badminton in high school. Some of them were on the math club, and they just didn't interact, really.
Are you sure that they weren't all in the same lunch table all alone? You sure about that?
They're really different disciplines, fundamentally. I mean, the optical guys are incredibly brilliant. I mean, these are physicists with PhDs doing unbelievable things to get light down a fiber at the fastest rate possible with the least amount of errors, or if there are errors and they can recover from. I mean, they're just doing incredible stuff there. And that's a whole different discipline than sending packets and doing routing and all the other, what we would consider normal data center operations. And so I think they're just different disciplines at this point, but they're coming together. And, you know, some of these open optical networking platforms that are coming out now are bringing those two disciplines together.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely right. A lot of the optical engineers are, as you mentioned, quite literally PhDs. And not that the network engineers aren't really, really smart people, the L2, L3 folks, they definitely are. Please don't quote me saying they're not. But they're normally not physics PhDs. You know, it happens occasionally, but it's rare. Optical, a lot of them are physics PhDs, and a lot of it is just because of what they're doing in this case, which again, literally is changing light and making light work in a way that is needed for networking.
Yeah, I think that's pretty awesome. Speaking of networking with light, lasers. I just wanted to check in and see what you guys think of lasers.
To me, this is the wildest thing about optical networking. And it's one that for many folks is you know, of course, that's so obvious. But for me, I still think it's amazing. And the fact that it is light and we're dealing with putting more and more data into a light wave. And we don't want to do it via, you know, changing the frequency of it. And so therefore, you're changing the amplitude of it. So it's literally doing more and more data and shoving via amplitude modulation, shoving more and more data into that light and actually having, again, a laser on one end and a laser on the other end and being able to tweak the transit power. To me, that's just fascinating that it's able to do that. And some of the stuff we're seeing now is on the boundary between the optical and the electrical and how it then gets transmitted into straight bytes. So that analog digital transformation. I just think that is just the wildest thing. And so it's exciting for me.
Speaking of transmitting data through light, just how close do you think we are to uploading holograms to droids and then sending them across spaceships to warn the rebels?
That already happened. That happened a long, long time ago.
I know, but how
galaxy
close are
far, far away.
How close are we to that?
Oh, I see. I have no idea. I'd like to, I don't know.
All right, maybe you need to spend some more time at OFC and get those answers.
I need to do more research on laser transmission of, and why did it fade? That doesn't make any sense. If it's a hologram, is there like air in the way? It shouldn't wrinkle.
You got to help
or
us,
maybe
Brian
it was just
O'Sullivan,
crappy CGI from 1977. Yeah. I know, that's the other possibility.
Need better modulation techniques. And yeah, that would be,
right.
I mean, it is amazing just how far these over a single fiber, you can go, like with the Voyager platform, hundreds or even thousands of kilometers.
Yeah, that is amazing.
I mean, here to Dallas, single run of fiber, just boom, you're there. And the fact that you're going over that long of a distance, I mean, that fiber is really expensive. It's not like you go to the a data center and say, oh, yeah, you need to change that cable. So you're not going to change that cable that runs from here to Dallas.
Right.
And so they go through extraordinary measures to optimize that cable and get the most out of it. And it's just, like I said, some of the techniques that they use. You mentioned amplitude modulation, phase shift modulation, mm-hmm. all these techniques that are getting... Right now, probably the state of the art is not state of the art, but the the common high end is probably 200 gigabits per second in a single wavelength. That is just amazing. And then they take
which again means a particular color, right? Because it's light, so it's one
wavelength is a color. Although we can't really see the colors, it's up in the ITU C band. 190 something terahertz is where these things are. And but I mean, they're picking one particular channel, getting 200 gigabits on that one wavelength. And that is just amazing. Then, of course, they combine the wavelengths. So you take, this channel that's going at 200 gig, and you take another channel going 200 gig, and they can put about 96 of these channels
combined
on
together.
One fiber.
Yeah,
you're getting like over 19 terabits on one fiber strand. That is just
and
awesome.
And to put in, like a Blu-ray, I think, is 25 gig. I think
gigabytes
gigabytes, but still, and so we're talking orders of magnitude per second.
Yep,
greater than that. Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Unbelievable amount of bandwidth they can get on these things.
There was a time when we had T3 lines and things like that, and we're like, so fast, it's incredibly.
I've got ISDN to my home.
Yeah, it's incredible. This is a lot faster.
And they do crazy things. I mean, we talked about the modulation. They have the errors, right? If when you're going that long of a distance, the latency actually becomes an issue. If I'm sending packets from here to Dallas and there's an error, you have to send a reply back that said, oh, there's an error. Could you send it again? And I send it again. That just takes forever.
Right. Even at the speed of light, it takes.
Even the speed of light, especially, you start to get the distances across the country, is huge. So they do these crazy things like they do forward error correction. Mm. And did you know on your laptop, the SSD drive in your laptop is constantly reading errors? They push the technology of the SSDs, the NAND, in there so much that they anticipate that the data you write isn't actually going to be able to be read perfectly. And so they include extra error correction with the drive, extra data that they write. And when they read it back, they kind of fix it up. And they do the exact same thing on these optical links. With this technology called forward error correction, where they take extra bits, a little bit of extra overhead. So when they send the data with this little bit of extra overhead and it gets to the other end, even if there were some errors that bits get flipped, they can correct them. And so that eliminates that latency of going back and forth across the country to correct an error. Crazy stuff like that. It's just the whole idea of, like I said, you take those wavelengths and you put them all into one fiber. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And then at the other end, you split them back out.
Right, and you're splitting. I mean, again, because it's a laser, because it's light, you're literally using a prism to break apart the colors and break apart the wavelengths, and then or combine them as the case may be. Because there are things you can do. There are things you can't do easily from an optical perspective. Like, for example, when I was going to say we, it's not just us, but if you're doing Ethernet connectivity, there's some level of communication between both ends to say, okay, everyone good over here, everyone good over there. That has to be done much more manually in the case of light. And part of that is because it's more analog versus digital, right? It's not just a bit that's flipping on and off. It's that it's supposed to run at this precise amplitude. And if it's 1.04 times that, is that because it was supposed to be 1.25 times that, or is it supposed to because it was 1.04, but maybe you're just a little bit off? And so there has to be a lot of handshake and between the two. So there's more setup. It's a good reason. I'm not saying the optical folks are not did it for a dumb reason. There's a perfectly good reason, but it's still wild. And some of the things that Ethernet can do, I'll say for free. It's that nothing's for free, but happens without the user, happens without any configuration on the end of the user. It just sort of magically determines the connectivity. You can't necessarily do in the optical, but that's still it's the whole thing is wild to me.
Yeah, my image of that multiplexing, you know, the prism. I always could think of and I'm dating myself again. I go back to high school. Is Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon mm-hmm. album cover?
Right.
I was just thinking that. Yeah,
it's got the white light coming in on one side and the colors going out on the other side.
That's right.
And I always think of that.
That's all we're doing.
Yeah. I mean, great progressive rock band and also optical networking pioneer.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Their song Money. That's about, if you listen to it in the right frame of mind.
And you play it backwards?
Is it about money? Is that the answer?
It's about the exorbitant cost of proprietary optical networking.
Okay. Well, yeah. All right. I'll
give it a listen tonight. You'll see.
Right.
You know what? Yeah. I'll buy that. I'll buy that on the subreddit that I see you like just now creating for Pink Floyd and optical networking.
User.
One subscriber.
User S. Emery has typed in this thing today at noon.
Back to optical networking. That's what we were talking about,
that's
right?
That's true.
Before we got into progressive rock, we'll do a Cumulus music podcast next. You mentioned proprietary networks and the exorbitant costs that they involve when it comes to optical networking. So what solutions does open networking have for that?
Well, right now, so we have the Facebook Voyager box that is in early access as we speak, and we'll be going GA soonish. There'll be some other boxes coming. Well, there's a industry thing called the TIP, which is the Telecom Infra Project. And that has come out with a couple of specifications, and one of them certainly was Voyager. We've got some other devices that are coming later in the year, early next year, depending. But which is, one of them that's coming is called the Cassini. That's more of a modular approach. Voyager is, of course, a fixed chassis approach. But what we're seeing is that, you know, we're taking the same basic concepts that we talked about in quote-unquote normal data center networking to say that we can have disaggregation of the software and the hardware. We can have a white box built hardware with commercial off-the-shelf silicon. Same exact thing we're doing here. In this case, of course, we have to have some special optical modules because it is packet optical. And then we're providing QMS Linux to run that. And there is, to Scott's point, a dramatic cost savings because we're not, you know, we're very open by saying we didn't design the chip. We didn't design the optical module. We didn't design that. We'll get the best folks in the world who already do that. That's their day job. We're just the ones building the best operating system, and we'll put our operating system on top of it and make it work. And there's been a lot of customer interest in it. And as we roll out, we're going through customer trials as I speak right now. As we roll out, it's looking quite interesting because folks are saying, I want to do data center interconnect. In most cases, there are other uses for it, but that's probably the biggest one we're pushing to say I want to interconnect my data centers. As Scott was talking, theoretically, that could be thousands of kilometers apart. Normally, it's not, but it could be. But, you know, now they're doing it. I talked with a customer yesterday who is doing it now at 10 gig, or maybe they have multiples. Maybe they're doing it at 20 gig. And one of these connections is 200 gig. And if they want to run it 7 kilometers, we don't care. That's totally fine. 7 kilometers is not a problem. 50 kilometers is not a problem. If you want to make sure you have it on in two adjoining cities, it's not an issue. And you can do it. And for the two boxes, you need, of course, one in each data center. You're talking less than probably you'd spend for one box in one data center for optical. So either customers who are already doing packet optical with traditional vendors, they can say, look, I can save quite a bit of money. Or conversely, customers who have never gone to optical networking, not because they don't think it's a good idea, but because the cost has been prohibitive. Now it opens up that venue for them as well. So it's been quite a bit of interest in it.
You mentioned TIP, the Telecom Infrastructure Project. So just to give a little background on that. So about 7 years ago, Facebook and a couple other companies started the Open Compute Project, the OCP. And they did that because they were building data centers and they wanted to spur innovation and open up some of the closed systems that were in the data centers, especially networking, but also, you know, servers and rack power and storage and stuff.
Even racks themselves, right?
Exactly. And it's been very successful. They, you know, they're basically open sourcing hardware, and people are taking that and innovating. And OCP has been a, you know, a real success, not just in the networking, but for the whole data center. So then they started looking at, well, there's this telecom market that's kind of similar, that it's very proprietary and all these closed systems. And so why don't we open up that? And so in a very similar manner to the way they started OCP, they were the catalyst and the starters of TIP. And the same idea, except for a different market. So this is for telecom, and OCP was for data center. And so they started about 2 years ago, the TIP, and kicked it off. And it's very similar, having gone through the whole OCP maturation. TIP is doing the exact same thing. And so it looks like it has all the earmarks of another successful open sourcing project to open up platforms, not just to make them cheaper, but also to be more innovative and allow more innovative designs.
Yeah, and I think from a collaborative perspective as well, right? So they're getting a lot of folks in from a lot of different areas and able to collaborate, and knowing that they can get the features they need and get it quicker. So it's not just cheaper, to your point, although it is, right? That's certainly a thing it is, but not just that. But also continuing with the pace of innovation and ensuring that, you know, again, because of the disaggregation, you're dealing with either the hardware folks or the software folks like us who are able to do things. That's all we do, and the ODMs, the guys who build the boxes, that's what they do. So they're able to turn it around much more quickly than, say, some of the vendors, even the vendors who are much, much bigger, who have to then worry about all of the moving parts and getting it all to work at once. And many of us smaller groups can iterate much more quickly. Yeah. Now we're seeing that with optical, which of course we didn't before. And TIP is not just doing that. They're doing things on the radio access network and the RAN world and other areas which we don't necessarily play in, but it's they're trying to innovate across a lot of the telecom world.
Yeah, the telecom market, of course, is huge, probably even more so than the data center market as far as all the individual segments go. But of course, we're focused on the networking and packet optical networking in TIP. And sort of give you a flavor, you mentioned Cassini and Voyager as two platforms. Both of those platforms are hardware-based platforms that have been submitted. Their design's been submitted to TIP. And so they're there, and they're available for anyone to see their designs, schematics, whatever. Anyone could build them. And there was a parallel that happened in TIP to OCP, where in OCP, the networking group had all these switches that have different ASICs in them, and they could be ASICs from Broadcom or Mellanox or Cavium or Barefoot or whoever, and they all had their own programming interfaces to those ASICs. And so one of the things that OCP did was say, hey, let's standardize the programming interface to switch ASICs, and that way it doesn't matter what ASICs are down below there doing the switching functions. We can program them in the common way. And they call that the switch abstraction interface. And then recently, TIP has done the exact same thing. So they looked over at OCP and said, how'd you solve this problem? Because in TIP, with the different platforms that are coming out, there's going to be different transponder modules, these optical modules. Right. And they're going to be made by various different companies, and they're all going to have their own programming interfaces to them. They created a standard interface called TAI, Transponder Abstraction Interface.
So we're at the point in the podcast where we play a quick little game. I'll ask you guys a would you rather question relating to networking, and I'm interested to hear what you have to say. So, would you rather, Brian and Scott, listen to ABBA for 24 hours straight, or train a member of the marketing team how to do your job?
Oh, I would definitely go with the marketing team. That sounds much more fun.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
ABBA,
I'm an engineer. I deal with marketing. That's painful.
Yeah, no, I
But Chiquitita, come on, Dancing Queen.
I'm not saying ABBA's bad. I'm saying that if they don't know what the stuff I know, it's you're teaching them. They can't critique what you're doing.
Oh.
I can even make stuff up. They're not going to know. It's fantastic. I love doing that stuff.
Yeah, and this is the routing protocol, WTF.
Yeah, exactly. People aren't going to question that. They're going to be like, oh, man, there's another one? And write it down.
There's too many acronyms. Yeah, I can't keep them all straight.
How come we don't do VXLAN routing over, you know, radio access networks? People go, is that a thing? I don't know. Is that a thing? Like,
yeah,
I just say it with a straight face. They'll believe me. Yeah, I'll definitely do that. No problem.
Scott, I don't know if we found out that you hate marketing or you really love ABBA.
I think it's a combination, actually.
I think his job is also much more technical than mine, and he'd have to really delve into a lot of civics. Mine is, you know.
You make a lot of stuff up.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Right. So I'd continue to do that.
All right. Awesome.
Call me on it.
All right. Well, I think we're close to the end of our time. Thank you very much to Scott and Brian for joining me and providing your valuable insight. For those of you who want to get a little more familiar with optical networking, you should definitely head to our website, cumulusnetworks.com, and check out our DCI Solutions page. You can find all the resources you need to learn about Data Center Interconnect and Facebook Voyager, and we'll be sure to include some links in the description. Also, make sure to subscribe to the podcast, follow us on Twitter and on Slack, and let us know if you have any questions or topics you want us to discuss in later episodes. And who knows, maybe your feedback will appear in an episode. Thank you all very much, and we'll see you in the next episode.